Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon continues on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hour three of the program continues here on a Thursday edition of The Big Show. It is Logan Gordon and Sandra Priscina along with you, and we kick off hour three with our regular Thursday guest. You can catch him on MLB and NHL Network or on the Cinephile podcast. It is the one, the only, Adnan Virk, who joins us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Good Thursday, Adnan. How are you, pal?
I'm doing great, Logan. Good to be with you. And Sandra, a pleasure. Should be a fun Thursday here. Lots of great hockey on tap. And, of course, our usual smorgasbord of baseball and movie talk.
Yes, looking forward to it. And let's start with what has consumed our city here in Calgary, obviously, the NHL playoffs. I know you've been on the desk for plenty of nights on the NHL Network. What's caught your eye so far in the NHL playoffs, Adnan?
Well, I just like the fact that as of a couple days ago, Monday I was working, and 23 of the 40 games had been decided by two or more goals. So there had been a lot of blowouts so far. And yet, the good news is a lot of these series had been going at least six games because so many of them were tied up two games apiece. So the good news is that at least the series are going long. The bad news is at least early on there was quite a few blowouts. But I think that the hockey has tightened up a little bit, and God, yesterday was amazing. The fact that Florida – for me, Logan, it should be everyone's second favorite team because I just love the fact that the way they play. It's high energy, high octane offense, and it's very fan friendly. And I said, God, I really don't want them to go out. It's part of what makes the first round of the playoffs so great, though, because you can see an upset like that. Whereas in basketball, that just doesn't happen. Like, it's just how many points are the Warriors going to beat the Nuggets by, and so on and so forth. Yesterday, by the way, NBA playoffs, ridiculous. Warriors almost lost by 40. Like, it was just crazy how bad some of those games can be. But in hockey, you can see a number one seed go out. So the big thing that caught my attention yesterday was the fact that Florida was down 3-0, was able to roar back with those five goals, including my boy Claude Giroux, and now send it to a game six. And I hope they can knock it out in D.C. and take care of business, because I just think Florida is a fun team to watch. They obviously have not had any playoff success since there was a bunch of rats being thrown on the ice way back in 1996. So obviously I'm cheering for Florida to do well. I thought the Rangers' big comeback yesterday as well, against Pittsburgh, they showed their mettle. And listen, if Crosby's out, you know, Louis Domingue's a third-string goaltender. Maybe Jari's back for Game 6, but I do think New York has more than a puncher's chance of trying to rally from down 3-1. And, of course, most importantly, good to see the Flames pick up the victory. I hope Calgary knocks it out in 6 in Dallas.
Lots of talk about this, and I wonder how much it comes up with what you do at NHL Network, because we hear it all the time, really around this time of the year, that there are people that are vehemently against the current playoff format, that they feel as though too many good teams go home early, that, you know, sometimes the excitement's all in round one and then it sort of passes us by. Where do you come out on the NHL's current playoff format?
I do think the first round is the best round, which is ironic. Like, normally you think you want to, you know, save the best for last, and maybe in other sports you kind of build up to that momentum. But I do think in hockey the first round is phenomenal, just because it's such guaranteed entertainment. Just is, it's not only the volume, but also the quality, along with the you know, the amount of games that you have. The fact that every night you're looking at least four games, and away we go, and the whole specter of potential overtime. So we haven't had any marathons yet, aside from the Pens Rangers, a triple overtime game. But I do think it's fair if fans say, listen, I think it's odd that the sport, the first round is the best round. That is true, but I still don't think the other rounds should be discounted. I just think the second round is probably the worst round. At least in the conference finals, the stakes are raised. And, of course, the Stanley Cup final is Stanley Cup final. I mean, that can be a crapshoot. There can be NBA finals that don't do well. There can be World Series that can be disappointments. So I don't necessarily have an issue with it. I do think a lot of teams make the playoffs, which means it dilutes the regular season a little bit. But it's been like that for a while, so I've come around to the fact that it's 16 of 30 teams, and I just enjoy the first round and enjoy the hockey as it happens.
Expanded playoffs in the NHL, should we see more teams, yes or no?
No, I think at that point it gets a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
If all of a sudden you have like 20 of 30 teams, why would you have two-thirds of the teams make the playoffs? What on God's green earth is the point of having the regular season? There's just no reason to watch that many games, and that's why it gets so frustrating.
I saw you guys had a great segment on this on NHL Network, and I'm curious what comes to mind when I mentioned the name Patrick Marleau to you, who hasn't played this season but officially announced his retirement after 23 NHL seasons.
Yeah, he was a guy who obviously had great leadership, and it's interesting talking to some of the guys. Bill Lindsay played with him, and so Billy and I were working together on Tuesday, of course, longtime Panther. And he said the big thing that stands out to him about Marlowe is his humility, his professionalism, the fact he was never like the leading man. I said, that's true. You always thought of Joe Thornton, and then Marlowe was kind of in the you know, supporting role almost, or 1A, 1B. He said, yeah, because that's kind of the way that Patty wanted it. He was a quiet, unassuming superstar, and obviously to play that many games, I mean, it's how people often say, right, the best ability is availability, and that was the case in Marlowe. I mean, the fact he was so durable and able to play that many games over 23 seasons, it's remarkable. And, you know, I think it would have been nicer if you have a story like that. You say, okay, you won three Stanley Cups along the way, or, you know, like Ray Bourque gets to wind up with a cup of the Avalanche. But, listen, Marlowe will always be Mr. Shark, and obviously had a few good seasons there in Toronto, but I think just a great goal scorer, obviously a great setup man. The durability and consistency really stand out to me. 23 seasons, that's remarkable.
NHL announcing their Hart Trophy finalists today as they continue these major award finalist announcements during the first round here. Some disappointment, I think, in the city of Calgary that perhaps Johnny Gaudreau didn't make the top three. But what did you make of the announcement today that saw Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, and Igor Shesterkin the final three when it comes to the NHL's Hart Trophy?
Logan, I was genuinely surprised. I mean, it was such a great debate all year. I mean, with the Vezina, everyone knows Shesterkin's going to win, and it wasn't a big deal with regards to the other two spots. I think with regards to Calder, bit of a surprise that Raymond gets edged out by Bunting, who's an older rookie, but everyone knows Mo Sider's going to win, and Zegras obviously very worthy. So when it came to the Hart Trophy, it was exciting because you actually had seven potential nominees. But I personally would have gone, you know, Matthews, Huberto, Gaudreau with Josi maybe fourth. So if I was ranking it, I would have gone, I think Matthews is going to win. I would have had him one. I would have had Huberto two, Gaudreau third, Josi fourth. Then I probably would have had McDavid at five and Shesterkin at six. So it's interesting to me, at least on my personal ballots, it's 1, 5, and 6 end up making the top three. So I can understand their theorizing is that Shesterkin, if you look at the most valuable player, the Rangers were, you know, especially the first half of the season, pretty mediocre team, carried by an all-world goaltender, and they may go out in the first round. And Shesterkin has been a little inconsistent here in the playoffs, so of course that has no bearing on whether or not he wins the Rookie of the Year, whether he wins the Hart Trophy or the Vezina. So I guess that was a theorizing there, the fact he's just so valuable to the Rangers. You know, maybe it just hurts Gaudreau because people say, wow, that whole line is so great when you look at Lindholm and Tkachuk and obviously the fact that they've got such balance there. But I'm with you. If I'm a Calgarian today, I'd be a little disappointed. I think that Gaudreau had a remarkable season. Definitely should have been certainly in their consideration to be in those top three or four. And with regards to McDavid, it's funny. He almost gets knocked out just because he is the best player in the world, and we all know that. But this year for Edmonton, again, had way too many stops and starts. And I do think he was supplemented by another great season by Draisaitl. Evander Kane was huge for them down the stretch. So I wouldn't necessarily put McDavid this year as one of his best seasons, despite the fact those gaudy point totals, and of course the fact that others are now down 3-2. Again, this has no bearing on the Hart, but the fact that he's up for the Hart Trophy and his team could get knocked out in the first round again shows how the disappointment seems to follow Connor McDavid. Still a long way to go. Hopefully they win that Game 6 against LA and then win Game 7, but I definitely feel the Flames fans pain. I think Gaudreau being nominated would have been nice, but ultimately it really doesn't matter who the three nominees are. I think it's Austin Matthews' trophy to lose.
NHL Network, the host for the NHL's draft lottery the other day that saw the Montreal Canadiens pick first. They will make that selection in front of their home fans in Montreal later this year. Question one to this, Adnan, was, now, was there any attempt by you to potentially get in one of the back doors there and rig this for the Philadelphia Flyers?
I was doing all I could, Logan. I was there, and Jamie Hirsch and Kevin Weeks, my colleagues, were literally in the studio next door. So I was doing the show from 6 till 7:30 Eastern, and I was very perplexed. I said, hang on a second. The draft lottery is 6:30 to 7. I said, yeah. I said, I thought, am I on the air from 6 to 6:30?
Yeah.
And you guys are doing your show? And then I go, no, our show is on ESPN. I said, oh, so it's being produced by NHL Network. It's on ESPN, and I'll just be the schlub working away next door. Great, no problem. So I did what I could, but the fact that if I was actually working on the show, I could have done it. I would have been clearly getting in the way that Shane Wright would be a future Philadelphia Flyer. Listen, Kingston Frontenac, you know, I grew up in Kingston. It would have been a perfect story between Kingston and the Flyers. It would have been great, but sadly couldn't make do. The fact the Flyers only got fifth, clearly I did not able to work my magic. But Good for Montreal. It was funny. I think we were talking last week, Logan, maybe I was talking about it with Boomer and Pinder on Tuesday, but whether or not the GMs would be there. I think it was actually with Boomer and Pinder, and I said, no, a lot of those guys via Zoom. It would have been nice, actually, if they were kind of circulating, right? I would definitely would have gone to Chuck Fletcher and had a few thought points with regards to the Flyers, some roster decisions. Chuck, I've had some ideas. Here's what we should be doing with regards to the black and orange. But, yeah, all those guys were via Zoom, and it was funny. Kent Hughes didn't look thrilled at all. Like, normally I'm used to the NBA draft lottery, right? The guys get fired up. I'm like, bro, you just got right. Like, you got the future star, and it's in Montreal. That never happens, that the number one pick is in the host city. Cue the conspiracy theorists. But a very muted reaction by Kent Hughes. Apparently he's waiting to pop the bubbly later with Jeff Gorton, and then they can get after it.
Total poker face from Hughes on that. Was not giving any indication how he felt about it. I was curious, were you holding out hope for the Flyers? I know the odds are what they are, and it's always complicated process to figure it out, but was there a small part of you hoping that when it comes to where the Flyers were supposed to be picking, that card was another team and you would have hopped up into one of those two spots?
Oh, no question. That's my thing, is even when I see 10%, 12%, 16%, it's like Dumb and Dumber, right? You're telling me there's a chance. I don't care what the chance is. As long as we have a chance at moving up, would have been nice. Even the number one I knew was unlikely, but number two would have been great. So, yeah, ultimately, the ping pong balls fall where they may. I do like the whole concept of the draft lottery. You know, I'm not a lottery kind of guy, not a pro line or a lotto 649 kind of guy, but I do like the concept, because I think for years so many teams were tanking trying to get that top pick. And of course, in some ways it can be a crapshoot, but obviously the worse you are, the better chance you have hitting on a number one pick. And you can't miss with the number one, like with the Rangers and Lafreniere. You know, I worked that draft in 2020. Yeah. He's been kind of a slow starter, but now it looks like he's coming around, and I think he'll be a 20-25 goal scorer. I don't think he's going to be a great player, but when you go back and say, when you're the number one, you've got to be able to hit on this. And I think for the Montreal Canadiens, they are going to be hitting on Shane Wright.
Are you getting frustrated now? This is an interesting relationship now, because you're a New Jersey guy now for work, but the Devils now, you know, the great Devils teams of the early 2000s and the late 90s, now they're becoming the Oilers of the East. They're having all of this NHL draft lottery luck, and they're doing it in the face of your Flyers in the same metropolitan division. Do the Devils, do they work in a soft spot based on you living in New Jersey, or is it still sort of a hatred for the team there?
No, it's interesting the way you bring that up, because you do think after a while, right, and you live in a place, I do love New Jersey, I love living here, and especially, you know, hockey is not celebrated the way it is back home, so whenever I meet a Devils fan, I'm happy to meet them, like, oh, hey, you're a hockey guy, that's great, all right, Devils, let's go. But whenever I feel any sort of inkling towards pulling for them, I just go back to thinking about Scott Stevens when he just ruined Lindros' career with that hit and that concussion. You know, I go back to the 2000 playoff series. I mean, there's so many memories I have just despising the Devils. I can't overcome my own personal animus towards a team. But it's probably softened maybe 10%, Logan. Like, I work with Ken Danico, who's Mr. Devil, and he's a phenomenal guy. So literally, like, just my relationship with Ken Danico, I kind of feel like, all right, I hope the Devils are atrocious. Like, it'd be nice to see them in the playoff mix. But, of course, I never want it to be, you know, at the mercy of the Flyers. I want them to lose every time they face Philadelphia. But now I know that expression. People say, oh, the Devils and Flyers, a quick trip down the turnpike. I'm like, yeah, now I know what that is about. It is literally an hour and a half drive down the turnpike, and I can go watch the Flyers. And the one good thing I like about the Devils, too, is tickets always available. As you know, I went and saw the Flyers-Devils 30 minutes from my house. So there's a bunch of Flyers fans there. So not that it was hard to get Philly tickets either, but it's funny. You can go just check out the local team and still support your team. And I think everyone knows the Flyers-Devils rivalry has been good for years. Lately hasn't been as great. But you are right. They are building some young talent there, hopefully special. And I do – the other thing I like about the Devils, I love their third jerseys. Like the black jersey that just says jersey.
Yeah.
If it wasn't standing for the Devils, they probably would rock that jersey. It's a really cool jersey.
We're chatting with Adnan Virk from MLB and NHL Network. Also find him on the Cinephile podcast, our Thursday regular, joining myself, Logan Gordon, with my special co-host this week. I believe her first chance to chat with Adnan. It is Sandra Priscina. Sandra, what do you got for Adnan?
Well, I'm curious about your thoughts on Barry Trotz, because it definitely sent some shockwaves through the hockey community. Lou Lamoriello saying his team needs a new voice. So what do you think for Barry? Does he take a year off? Is there a landing spot that's potentially preferential?
Well, it's interesting, Sandra. I don't think he's going to be out of work for very long. And immediately all of us at NHL Network were like, hey, we're putting out feelers trying to get Barry Trotz in the air. Because sometimes when you get former coaches or GM personnel, they come and do some TV. They're very guarded with what they say. They're very careful because, of course, they want to get back in the game. Now, I think Barry will absolutely get another coaching job because he's so coveted. There's very few guys who won a Stanley Cup in the last 5 years. I think if we can get him on the air for the next 2 months, he'll just let it fly. So I would love to have him, by the way, as a colleague in the short term. Not sure if it's going to happen. But I think, listen, he's going to have a job by the draft if he wants to. Whether or not he wants to be the coach of the Jets or my Flyers or any other vacancies popping up, I think he's going to be there. With regards to Lou, you know, he's done this before. Robbie Fitorecki fired, I think it was 2000, literally just games left in the regular season, you know, replaced him with himself. He did that to another coach. I can't remember the top of my head. Was it Jacques Lemaire or replaced with Jacques Lemaire? But Lou's done this a couple times, like where a coach is very well-respected and well-liked and seems like he's going in the right direction. And then for some reason, he just pulls the switch on him. And listen, in many ways, Lou is beyond reproach because the fact he's a Hall of Famer, he's had so much success. But Sandra, honestly, this one's head-scratching to me. That Islanders team is flawed in terms of its roster construction. Like, they've got a lot of third-line guys. Mm-hmm. They don't have a lot of first-line guys. And they have, obviously, a tough way to start the season with that lengthy road trip because they're waiting for UBS Arena to be done. But they just don't have enough jam. Like, they got a lot of these Cal Clutterbucks and Casey Cizikas's. They don't have enough, like, you know, John Tavares's back in the day. So I actually think Barry Trotz did as good a job as he could with the Islanders. And if you look at that roster, they're clearly built with the concept of defense first. And where are you going to get a better defense-first coach than Barry Trotz? Like, I can't imagine another coach coming in there and allowing them to play a stronger, sounder defensive game unless Lewis just wants to open it up right now and wants to get a more of an offensive-minded coach. You know, Peter Laviolette or Joel Quenneville, whatever Joel Quenneville is going to get reinstated by the league, if indeed that happens. So that was my first thought for the Islanders is that, okay, maybe they're going to try to get like a Joel Quenneville type like that. But for now, probably just staying in-house. One of the assistants will get promoted. You know, Lou's hand is always firmly on the ticker. He's almost an octogenarian. The guy's 79 years old, and Lou's out there still pulling moves like this. But to your original question, Barry Trotz will get a job whenever he wants. He's very well respected, and I think probably surprised and taken aback by the move.
Now, you mentioned Barry potentially joining you in the broadcast area, but I want to know your take on Tom Brady's broadcasting deal, and how soon do we maybe see him holding a microphone?
I think it's one more year with the Bucs. I think he just, the joke, which I think is accurate, as the proud father of four children myself, is Tom spent a month at home and said, okay, never again. Like, this, I'm going back to the field. I will risk a punctured lung and a concussion and an amputation as long as I don't have to change any more diapers and have to try to manage my children. I'll go pay someone else to do that for me, get Giselle to do that for me. I'm going to go play football. So I think he felt like he's got one more year left in the tank, at least. But I think he's a year-to-year kind of guy, Sandra. I think if he goes out this season and has a remarkable year and they lose, let's say, in the NFC Championship game, then I think he'll still come back for one more year. Like, I'm not going to be on anyone's timetable. You know, he is clearly dictating his own terms. He didn't want Bruce Arians to be the coach anymore. Guess what? Bruce Arians is gone. So mm-hmm. Tom is back for another year, and he has tons of personnel say and control, and why not? He's delivered a Super Bowl in one of two seasons to Tampa, still had a good year last year, a very good season by his numbers. He was top five MVP. So I think he'll play as long as he wants to. It's at least a year, if not two or three. And then, of course, he's now got this deal here with Fox, which is just hysterical to me. Sometimes when you read Twitter, you feel like you're being duped by a fake account. That happened to me after the Oscars. Somebody tweeted that Chris Rock's camp had apologized to Will Smith. I retweeted it, and then someone said, no, this is fake. I said, oh, God, I can't believe I've been duped. So when I saw the Tom Brady news, Sandra, I said, okay, this is a joke. This is like a headline from The Onion. This isn't actually – and I said, oh, my God. And once I saw the numbers, I mean, my eyes were popping out of my – you know, like those cartoons and those – you know, those eyes are popping way out front of their head, like from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. 10 years, $375 million for a guy who's never said one thing interesting in his life. Like, it's just absurdity.
We call that Steinberg money around here, Adnan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Steiny would love to have that kind of per diem. I mean, it's just – it's nuts to see because, you know, in many ways, and I adore Derek Jeter, but Brady's kind of like Jeter. Like, he's a great professional, ultimate winner, team leader, but he's never been interesting. And as my friend Dan Lemitard said, if Brady's getting $375, well, then Charles Barkley should get $1 billion. Like, Charles Barkley's incredible. He's a great analyst, and he's funny, and he's outspoken, he's smart. I don't know how good Tom Brady will be as a broadcaster. My hunch is he'll be good because, for one reason, he's very prepared. He'll never want to let himself look bad. So I think he's going to watch tape. He'll break stuff down. He'll talk to smart people around him. You know, he'll get advice from Peyton Manning or Tony Romo or whoever he wants in his Rolodex, and he'll improve. But I just don't see him being particularly entertaining or funny unless he has that in his personality, which he probably does, and will now finally show it to us on television after 20 years of being relatively guarded and robotic. So we know he's got a face for the TV and obviously a voice and, you know, $100 million smile. But now we'll actually see if he has the substance. But whenever he wants to do it, I'll be curious to see it. It's remarkable how it's changed, though, right? For years, we had these old war horses like John Madden. Now it's these young, handsome quarterbacks, whether it's Tony Romo or Tom Brady, all those guys stepping up looking to get paid.
And anything you're maybe paying attention to tonight with the NFL schedule, something you want to see come to fruition this fall?
No, it's funny. I always laugh. The two things I laugh at is always the draft and the schedule, how much scrutiny is paid to it. Because with regards to the schedule, I'm like, you know who's playing whom. Like, as an Eagles fan, I know we're going to play them in the Cowboys and the Giants and the Washington football team and the Commanders. And like, okay, it's just a matter of when it is. I think what happens is, Sandra, people smarter than me look at it and say, okay, hey, check out weeks 4 through 6. It's going to be particularly treacherous for Green Bay because they're going to be on the road, and here's where the schedule could be tough. So it's one of those things where I don't really know what to look at before it happens. Then once the schedule is released and people kind of put a fine-tooth comb through it and say, okay, who are the teams expected to be the best? Look out for KC weeks 12 to 15. That could be their Death Valley road. That's when I find it interesting. But at least on paper, I said, okay, great. Mike McCarthy and the Packers are playing the Cowboys, you know, his return against Lambeau. Obviously, we're going to get the Chiefs and the Packers at some point, all the sexy type matchups. So, yeah, I'm always amused by how much scrutiny there's paid to the schedule release date, because generally you know who's playing who. It's just a matter of when they're playing each other.
Moving to baseball, a couple ones for you here as we continue our chat with Adnan Virk from MLB Network and NHL Network. What have you made of hot starts to the season so far for the New York Yankees and the LA Angels, Adnan?
Every year, Logan, there's a surprise team. Every single time. That's why you know I love baseball, because at least on paper you say, okay, I've got this figured out. If we went through division by division, all three teams, by the way, I picked to win their divisions in the National League, are doing so right now. The Mets, the Brewers, and the Dodgers. Okay, got that straight. I figured the Padres and Giants have another great season. So far, they're playing very well. Okay, sounds good. Over the American League, I said Jays would win. A little bit over 500 right now. The Yankees, I said, would make the playoffs. Better than I would have thought. In the Central, I would have said White Sox. No, the Twins. Big surprise team right now. Can they hang on? And the team you mentioned that I find the most exciting right now is the LA Angels. And they are truly legit. They are that sleeping giant we did not see coming. Everyone I spoke to said Astros in the West, maybe the Mariners, who I believe I picked. Right now, the Mariners look like a very shaky pick. They're right around 500. The Astros have played great. They won 8 straight games. They're up 5-1 against the Twins last night, then had that game suspended, then picked up again today. But LA is for real, man. And the biggest reason why is they finally have some starting pitching. They've got these two transcendent superstars in Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout. And the numbers on Ohtani are just ridiculous. Going into yesterday, a 1 ERA in his last 3 starts, 27 strikeouts, and 2 walks. And if you take out one bad outing against the Rangers, and by the way, bad is relative. I believe he gave up 4 runs over 5 innings.
Yeah, like an average start.
Right, like an average start. His ERA is literally like 1.19. And yesterday, he throws 6 innings, only 2 hits, 1 earned run, but he got 0 run support. Like Ohtani dealing again, which is remarkable to see, but now he's finally got some support. Noah Syndergaard looks like he's back. Michael Lorenzen has been great. Sandoval's good. And the guy who I just saw last Wednesday when I called the Red Sox-Angels game, Reed Detmers, now years from now I can say, oh, I called the game before Reed Detmers threw a no-hitter. I knew he was going to do it. He looks so good at Fenway Park. I wish I could have called the no-hitter. I'm so upset I missed it by one start. But that kid is a stud. He's the Angels' top pitching prospect. And Joe Maddon told me, watch out. He's got an old-school Johnny Podras curveball, which I had to double-check my brain. Yes, Johnny Podras pitched for the Brooklyn Dodgers back in 1955, has a classic curveball, like you and I might say, Barry Zito or Clayton Kershaw. So they finally got some pitching, and they obviously have guys that can rake. If you want to go by analytics, Trout has a 248 OPS plus. For those who don't know what that number means, OPS plus basically just takes on-base plus slugging, and the average is 100. Trout at 248 is just a ridiculous number.
Ridiculous.
He's leading the major leagues in slugging percentage. He's back at it again. Ohtani's bat, not as great as a year ago, but still decent. And the big thing is now they've got lots of support. Taylor Ward won Player of the Week a couple weeks ago. Last night he shows up and hits a tying home run, which is absolutely massive after missing the last couple of games. Rendon, I think, is finally healthy. He'll be productive. And they're playing much better defense. You know, guys like Max Stassi can actually catch the ball and pick the ball and make the plays that they're supposed to. So the Angels aren't going anywhere. And as for the Yankees, my buddy Aaron Boone, he's got them rolling. 22-8 in their first 30 games. The previous 8 times the Yankees won 22 of their first 30 games, they went to the World Series every single time. And 7 of those 8 times, they won the World Series. The one outlier is 0-3 against the Marlins. So at least in these parts here in North Jersey, everyone's talking the Yankees, Mets, potential Subway Series. Both teams look great. Aaron Judge, by the way, is on pace for 56 home runs and 123 RBI. The Yankees offered him an 8-year deal for $230 million. He turned it down, and now it's looking like he's going to get even more than that. Talk about betting on yourself.
Yeah, it looks like a good bet so far for Aaron Judge. And when you're talking about, you know, one of the best starts in franchise history, when you're talking about the New York Yankees, you know with how good that team's been over the decades, that that's a pretty good start to your year. Two more on baseball for you. Sticking in California, pretty much the opposite of the Angels and a great offense is the Oakland Athletics. I don't know what to say about this group here, Adnan. Setting records for low attendance and setting records potentially this year for the anemic offense. If you're looking to bring in more fans, it's certainly not going to be with the pop of an offensive bat with the Oakland A's. It is just a mess with that organization.
Yeah, I tweeted the numbers yesterday. 231 on-base percentage through their first 31 games, whatever it is. I believe it's 31 games. That's the third lowest ever in baseball history through that many games. And their 200 batting average through that many games, the third lowest in baseball history to begin a season. It's awful. The shock was that after 2 weeks, they actually were like in second place in the West. I know it was only 16 games, but they were playing 500, which is remarkable considering the fact they traded Matt Olson, they traded Matt Chapman, they traded Sean Manaea. And yet they were still kind of treading water, but ultimately you can see they're not a good team. And as you said, I just feel bad for the fans of Oakland. I mean, it's a very small bunch, you know, and now its attendance last week was like 3,000. But in the playoffs, they show up. It's like the old school Raiders. It's like the black hole watching those A's fans. I worked with Dallas Braden for many years. He's a wonderful, wonderful guy. Of course, pitched a perfect game for the A's, works on their broadcast. It's a shame because they just want a better stadium, and they should be in San Jose. But, of course, San Francisco's always put up a fuss about territorial rights and all the rest of it. The O.co is very outdated, but this is what they do. You know, the last 5 years, they averaged 95 wins a season, and they go, all right, not good enough, let's rebuild. And sure enough, 3 years from now, they're going to be good again. For now, though, it'll be some painful growing pains.
Last one for baseball. You had mentioned it when you mentioned the Yankees there, the other team in New York, the New York Mets off to a great start of their own. And somehow, Adnan, it's pretty rare this time of the season, but the group has opened up a 6-game lead already in the NL East.
Yeah, that's shocking, Logan. I'm glad you mentioned that because normally the NL East is always like, you're right, 3 games, 2 games. Miami's in there, the Braves defending champions. Miami's got that great young pitching. Phillies have an excellent offense, and yet it looks like the Mets are going to start to pull away from this thing. Scherzer's been as advertised. Sterling Marte, good pickup. Eduardo Escobar, Mark Canna, all those guys have been impactful. Lindor has bounced back big time from a really messy season a year ago. Alonso is a great power hitter who he can rely on. J.D. Davis can chip in with some hits. And, of course, my old buddy Buck Showalter, we worked together last year at MLB Network. He's worked at ESPN in the past. He's just a great manager. He just understands the feel of his team and what they're looking for, and they really got really good pitching. I mean, the start lasted. The first in the McGill's really been rocked, but he's been really good for them, Tyler McGill. Carrasco's been excellent, Cookie Carrasco. So they've been out supplementing Scherzer, and Diaz really kind of fortified that bullpen. So the Mets, to me, feel like the best team in the East. I picked them to win in Africa. I said, no, I probably should have gone with the Braves, but I do think the Mets are legit. Another win this afternoon, 22-11. They're looking awfully good.
Last one for you. We'll dive into to movies quickly. I don't actually know this. I've never asked you, but Top Gun, were you a big fan of the original?
It's funny. You know, I saw it when I was 7 or 8. And at the time, I mean, I definitely loved it. I was a kid, right? What did I know any better? I remember Anthony Edwards' Goose. And I do love that song by the Righteous Brothers, You've Lost That Love and Feeling. So I haven't had any inkling to watch it since then because I would think, like most 80s movies, it would not hold up. But so far, great reviews. Although I find Tom Cruise loathsome, he's just such a raving psycho. I mean, every time you see him in the press, I just picture him jumping up and down Oprah's couch. Well, this guy's a nut job.
Well,
the fact that his spouse is Scientology and the Katie Holmes marriage, like it's going to be a tough one, Logan, because if the reviews are as good as what I'm hearing, which is that they're excellent, I'll have to see the movie for the action. So I'll have to hold my nose and boo Tom Cruise and just try to enjoy the movie without him.
Well, and I'm trying to remember because they've been in production on this thing for so long because of COVID and pushbacks and all of that. I'm trying to remember, was it his rant that went viral a couple of years ago about the COVID rules and everybody keeping, he had that sort of temper tantrum on set? I'm trying to think, I got to think it was during filming of this movie that went crazy a little while ago.
Yeah, that was the one. Of course, Tom Cruise, ranting Tom Cruise, being a psycho as always. I'm like, this is who this guy is. Trust me. I know he's charismatic on screen, but he's a loon. So, yeah, that's exactly what we're thinking about. Everyone's going to go spend $15 to go watch the big screen again.
Yeah, and to me, honestly, the most curious part about this was that the director, you know, Joseph Kosinski, is the guy that gets the call to do this, and he doesn't have a ton of directing credits to his name, but obviously the one that made the difference in this one is going back to 2013 when he worked with Tom Cruise on Oblivion. Obviously well aware of what comes with working with Tom and, you know, how to get the best out of him, because I had to bring it up because the early reviews for Top Gun Maverick were so strong. So it'll be interesting to see, but clearly, you know, somebody that has the awareness and ability to work with Tom was going to be important for this project.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he runs the production. Of course, something with Top Gun, his name is going to carry so much value. So he's an A-list talent, even though he's an A-list you-know-what.
Yeah, going to be interesting to see late May release. Based on the reviews, it looks like we're going to have to go see it, but we'll keep our eyes peeled for it. Anything that your Judd Apatow episode of Cinephile was great there. What's coming up on the pod?
Yeah, I encourage everyone to go check it out. 30 minutes of Judd Apatow. Next week, we've got Patrick Fabian from Better Call Saul. What a terrific show that is. He's terrific on the show as Howard. So also reviewing The Offer from Paramount Plus, The Making of the Godfather 10-part series. It's so good. So that's coming up next week on Cinephile.
And then appreciate the time as always, man. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you again next week, hey?
Logan, a pleasure as always. Thanks, Andrew. Good to meet
you as well. Have a great one.
Thanks, Adnan. There you go.
All right, take care.
Adnan Verk, MLB Network, NHL Network, and the Cinephile podcast. One of the greats. There's really nowhere that you can't go with Adnan and get a good answer. And looks like the text line, always quick on these ones, Sandra. I think that rant was during the Mission Impossible movies that Tom Cruise. Do you remember that one? Did you? Because you're always at 660, and I know that probably would have garnered it. Do you remember hearing about that Tom Cruise rant a couple years ago?
About how people weren't wearing their masks.
Yeah, there was. Yeah, they were just vaguely, just getting back to filming. He was super frustrated that they had kept having to push it back, and you couldn't have groups of people at that time together to film a movie. And he had seen some people who weren't wearing their masks and were kind of being a little lackluster about the you know the whole COVID rules. And he was furious that they might get shut down again. And somebody. I mean, let's be honest, somebody was probably recording it because it's Tom Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just an accidental microphone around somewhere. But I remember when that happened, people were, oh, man, Tom Cruise. And as you heard from a crazy guy, right? It's another Tom Cruise rant at the text line. Quick to point out, it wasn't actually Top Gun Maverick. Looks like it was when he was filming Mission Impossible 5 was when he had that that temper tantrum. But
there you go.
You're a Tom Cruise guy? You like you, Tom Cruise do it for you or no?
I'm not a big movie person overall, and for Tom Cruise, I like the original Top Gun, but probably that's because it's more 80s, and I like the soundtrack.
The soundtrack's great. The soundtrack's fantastic, and I brought it up with Adnan, A, because he's a movie guy, and we're starting to get early releases for critics as it's set to come out late in May, and the early reviews, really good. I think it's running at a 96%. On Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay,
so,
that's impressive.
Yeah, if you're one of those people that holds those numbers in regard, I prefer to look at, say, the audience score, which is always interesting when movies come out. But if you're big on, you know, hype for movies, so far Top Gun Maverick looks like a pretty big hit for Tom Cruise. We'll take a break, come back on the other side. We got one more segment left on the program. Sandra's got headlines coming up next here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
Final segment of the program before we hand things over to Flames Talk on this Thursday afternoon. Make sure you're listening in for all editions of Flames Talk, but with Matt and Pat recently, you want to listen in for the Spiciest Moment contest on Flames Talk. The Flames Spiciest Moment brought to you by Bacardi Spiced Rum. And after last night, Sandra, the Scotiabank Saddle Dome, I think the guys have a couple of good options when it comes to the spicy moment.
Probably half a dozen.
Yeah.
There were some good ones, yeah.
Could be the Backlund goal, the Mangiapane goals, but even the Lewis goal probably.
Markstrom save.
Yeah. A good quote from Darryl post-game. Lots to get to when it comes to the Spiciest Moment contest on Flames Talk is brought to you by Bacardi Spiced Rum. With our Thursday edition of headlines, push back a little bit. Thanks for our chat with Adnan Verk. Here's the one, the only Sandra Priscina. Sandra, what's going on tonight?
Well, we do have a four-game night in the NHL. Four teams can book their spots in the second round. So looking to four seventh games, Boston, Tampa Bay, Minnesota, and Edmonton. The Bruins are getting blue liner Hampus Lindholm back versus Carolina. So he'll be reunited with Charlie McAvoy on the top pairing. Doesn't look like the Maple Leafs will be making any changes as they look to eliminate the two-time defending Stanley Cup champs. The Wild, meanwhile, turning to Cam Talbot in a must-win versus the Blues. St. Louis will be going with Jordan Binnington in the blue paint, along with 11 forwards and 7D. And the Oilers are without blue liner Darnell Nurse due to suspension as they look to force a seventh game versus the Kings.
Plenty of storylines tonight. We could look at four series wrapping up as soon as tonight, Sandra. I don't think that'll be the case. I think we'll get at least a couple of Game 7s on a Saturday night. I'm hopeful for that, but we'll see some big opportunities for guys here. I think if you're the Edmonton Oilers heading into L.A. without Darnell Nurse, you're going to look for a big game out of McDavid and Draisaitl. And really, we talked about this a bit earlier, the pressure on Cam Talbot, the former Flame, to essentially come in and, you know, stave off elimination for Minnesota, a tough task for him. You know he'll be up for it. We know the competitor that Cam is from his time here in Calgary, but I don't care who you are. It's a really tough spot, sitting with the first five and then sort of being asked to almost fill that savior role in Game 6.
Yeah.
Could be tough.
Okay, we've talked about this a lot today, but the Hart Trophy finalists, this is kind of like a band. Connor, Austin, Igor. And we've talked about it a lot.
What kind of music do you think they'd make? That's
progressive rock.
Okay, I like that, yes.
But the last time a goalie won the Hart, Carey Price in 14-15. Interesting, seeing a lot of different opinions on this one. Adnan mentioning he didn't even have Connor McDavid in his top four, I think it was, or maybe he was his fifth pick, but it is definitely a source of debate.
Yes, is it disappointing from a Flames perspective that Johnny Gaudreau, after the best season that he's had in his career, that he's not there? Yes. But I think at the end of the day, and this is what will be more interesting to me, Sandra, to have this conversation is when we get the final ballot. Because as we've mentioned today with Adnan or Lou or anybody else having this conversation, it was a unique year in the fact that I think you could sit here and say that there were three or four snubs, right? Johnny would be in there. And I mean, snub is even a tough word for it when there are great candidates. Is it really a snub when you've got guys that are having 60 goal seasons or, you know, that sort of, I don't know if it's a snub. It's disappointing for sure, but I mean, Roman Josi probably feels that way. Jonathan Huberdeau probably feels that way. There are a number of guys, you know, Kirill Kaprizov was having a great season for Minnesota.
Yeah.
I think it'll be really interesting to see how the final voting comes down, because we don't know how close or how far away any of these guys are, simply that these are the top three. My final guess is I'm assuming Austin Matthews has run away with this thing. That's my firm belief based on the year that he had. And I think there will be a shocking number of people that look at the ballot and you're going to see Connor, Igor, you know, Johnny, maybe Josi, Huberto, all really close to each other when it comes to the race for second or third in all of this. And, you know, for the most part, how you went about your voting today and or your voting for this award in total, I really can't argue with most. Now, there's an interesting one that's floating out there on Twitter about somebody that voted for this award and somehow kept Austin Matthews out of the top three. I don't know how you do that necessarily. I'm not going to name names, but to have a debate as to who was in or out when it comes to the top two or three or four, there were so many good candidates this
year. Agreed. Yeah, special year. Now, not so special, unfortunately. Sidney Crosby's injury, tough to watch given his concussion history. Coach Sullivan not really offering much in terms of an update today, saying it's upper body. The medical staff in Pittsburgh will be taking a look at the Penguins captain. And no hearing, it appears, or no fine for Rangers blue liner Jacob Trouba on that hit. Crosby with a team-leading 9 points this postseason. The Penguins still, though, with a chance to send the Rangers packing tomorrow.
Tough one here for the Penguins, because Crosby has really been an integral part of what they've done to the Rangers this series. Not only offensively, Sandra, but defensively, he's a guy that makes such an impact when you talk about playing against the other team's top players. And if he isn't available, and fingers crossed that he is, I want the best players to play during the best time of the year. it's going to be a massive blow for the Penguins if he's not available for this series. And I can understand why Mike Sullivan, in a Pittsburgh perspective, would be frustrated with the hit from Trouba and sort of perhaps see it a different way. I didn't have any problem. It was sort of more of an incidental contact thing. Yeah. When I looked at it, it's tough given his history and everything and how much he means to Pittsburgh. But at the end of the day, was I surprised that Trouba didn't have a hearing for it? No, I really wasn't.
Okay, a pair of meetings in the NBA playoffs, two game sixes. The Heat looking to book their ticket with a win over the 76ers, and Phoenix hoping to do the same to the Mavericks. So this should be a good night. Phoenix has looked great.
They sure have.
I can't see them not getting this done, but same with the Heat. And I know injuries have been a bit of an issue there, but both pretty good series. But I think for Phoenix, this is the night.
It sure could be. The way that they've played, I think the expectations around that group says that they get it done tonight. And, you know, look out if it's anything like last night in the NBA, then you know that nothing's really ever settled in this league. And
yeah.
With what Memphis was able to do to Golden State, I think these two teams are a little bit closely both these series, I should say, a little bit closely matched when it comes to this. I can't see what happened last night creeping into these series, but you never know. You always have to bring it in the NBA playoffs, or those sort of things can happen. And I think both teams in Game 6 are going to be aware of that tonight.
And listen, Luka Doncic could potentially go off.
100%.
He's done it before, taking that team on his back, so we never know.
Yeah.
Okay, Canadians on clay. Got to mention this. A great day for our tennis players at the Italian Open. Bianca Andreescu continuing her comeback. She's now in the quarterfinals. For the men, Felix Auger-Aliassime advancing to the quarters. And not long ago, this is a good one, Denis Shapovalov going the distance, beating Rafael Nadal to book his ticket in the final eight at the 1,000-level event. So going into the French Open, the Canadians look good.
Love to see it. It's a big win for Shapovalov, and good to see that we've got a couple of names to keep our eyes on there, Sandra.
And definitely got to mention this. Okay, John Herdman is reportedly sparking coaching interest in the Premier League.
Hmm.
According to John Cross of The Mirror, Burnley, Queen's Park Rangers, and Blackburn Rovers all having their eyes on the Canadian men's bench boss. He has never managed at a club level before, and I bet it's one of his aspirations eventually, but I think his to-do list starts right now with eyes on the World Cup.
Yeah, this makes so much sense. If you've paid any attention to what John Herdman's done for the national program here in Canada, I think that you would be silly to not consider him at a club level to sort of bring that sort of attitude and that winning spirit that he does. Yes, I think that John Herdman is a guy that prioritizes things correctly and understands that the World Cup is the first thing on his list, but to be honest, I'm surprised that it's taken this long to hear about that sort of interest, Sandra, because for the longest time now, I think he's made impressions across the soccer world that he's a guy that you need to look at for one of those jobs. So, going to be interesting to see.
Those are our headlines on this Thursday.
Thank you, Sandra. Appreciate it. We got one more show together for us tomorrow. We'll be at 403 Local Eatery and Bar getting you set for Game 6, Flames and Stars from Dallas. Coming up on Flames Talk this afternoon, busy day for the guys. Derek Wills joins for the Daily Flames Roundtable. Emilio Pettersson, Flames forward, Flames prospect, excuse me, Stockton Heat forward. And Wes Gilbertson of Post Media going to join the guys at 6:30. One piece of business to get done here before we finish up the show today, Sandra. It's not someone that a lot of listeners will be familiar with, but I did want to take a quick moment out of our show today to send a thank you to the guy running the board today.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Michael Kwas. You would have heard him at different times for us, but Mike's come in the last couple of weeks here at Sportsnet. We've gone through some tough staffing back and forth. He's been a rock star at literally every point. Not only has he been a great guy professionally, but he's just been a really awesome human being to be around. It's his last day here at the station, and I wanted to take a second to thank him for all the hard work that he's done. He's been an awesome guy, and really, you know, it's behind-the-scenes stuff. It's not stuff that we dive into on the air. It's not a voice you hear all the time, but really, the guys behind the scenes help us get through our day-to-day so much here, Sandra, and Mike's right at the top of the list with what he's done the last couple of weeks. So moving on to a new opportunity. That's great to see. I always like to see people succeeding and people moving up in the world like that. But have to admit, it'll be a little bit of a sad day for us here with Mike's last day at Sportsnet.
Now, the good news is he will actually be across the hall with me sometime.
Yes.
So you're not going to totally not hear from him.
Yes.
But the good news is Michael is an awesome human, as you said, soon to be first-time dad.
Yes.
So we wish him all the best.
Yes, Mike, all the best. Thanks so much for everything that you've done the last couple of weeks here for us, buddy. You've absolutely killed it. Best of luck to you and your girlfriend with the upcoming birth of your first child. And thanks for everything you've done for the program. We've really appreciated it, pal. So I wanted to take a quick second to thank Mike. And for all you listeners out there, you might just hear the voice of me and Sandra, but we don't get to the air. We don't get to do what we do if it's not for the hard work of guys like Michael Kwas. So congratulations, Mike. Good luck and the best of luck in the future. That'll do it for us here on The Big Show. Flames Talk with Pat and Matt is coming up next. Keep it locked here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Traffic for 310 Dump. Old reno materials and appliances piling up in your yard? Call 310 Dump. They'll deliver a bin, you fill it, call them, and they remove it. For more info on dumpster rentals, visit 310dump.com.
Calgary Traffic Update.
A new collision, a smash-up on Southland. This at Southport or Horton Road in the eastbound right lane, Southland Drive, slow from Elbow Drive. And there is mayhem on McLeod at the south end of the city, where there is construction near Stoney Trail, northbound from 210th past Stoney. It's crazy busy on McLeod Trail, southbound from beyond 162 in Sun Valley. It's also locked up tightly. And in the City News, 660 Traffic Center, I'm Trace Ventura. Get a 20,000-point offer to use at Shoppers Drug Mart Friday and Saturday. Get the BC Optimum app to load your offer. See digital coupon for details.
Game 6 goes back to Dallas. Flames and Stars, Friday night.
Every single fan on their feet here at Scotiabank Saddledome as the sea of red rises. The Flames win Game 5, 3-1.
Pre-game with Steinberg starts at 6:30. Wills and Lubardius have the play-by-play at 7:30. Home for the 2022 Stanley Cup playoffs. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Picture this. You're on the edge of your seat. There's 30 seconds left in regulation, and your favorite team is about to win it all. The buzzer sounds. That's it. Time to celebrate the victory. Bacardi Spiced Rum is a perfect complement to a big game victory. It's boldly spiced with a hint of smokiness and barrel age for a rich, velvety, smooth taste. Share the moment. Bacardi Spiced Rum. Why not grab a bottle at your nearest liquor store? Bacardi Spiced. Live passionately. Drink responsibly.
Calgary Flames Hockey is brought to you by Green Drop and Silver Hill Acura.